All right, and joining us now, our guest has written a book, Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning. And I am really anxious to talk to her because she grew up in China. She was there during Mao's Cultural Revolution. She eventually came to America. And I have seen this over and over again. You had Rod Dreher said he had his friend's parents who had been in Stalinist Russia were getting very upset. They said, this is exactly the same stuff we saw in Russia. This is exactly the same stuff she saw in China. And we need to understand where these people are taking us, and we need to understand what their tactics are. So joining us now is Xi Van Fleet. Her book is Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And you came to prominence. I mean, you were just kind of living a quiet life here in America, and you came to prominence in Loudoun, Virginia, because you were speaking out against some of the things that you saw in school. You said, this is exactly what I saw as a child growing up in China. This is the communist tactic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course, that was something that I was not prepared for. So I went to school board and thinking I'm just doing my duty, and have no idea that my video went viral. And at the same time, I was shocked to find how few people know anything about communism, and fewer people know about the Cultural Revolution. And so that's why I say that people have no idea what woke is. They thought it's something new. They thought it's just, oh, the left went crazy. But for people who experienced Cultural Revolution and who lived under communism, you don't have to experience the exact what I experienced, the Chinese Cultural Revolution. If you live under communism, it's, we recognize it instantly.
Yes.
This is communism, Marxism.
Yes. That's what Rod Dreher was saying. He said the people who have lived under it, whether you know it was Russia or China, they can smell it a mile away because you can't you can't not look the other direction. I was surprised because we adopted our daughter from China. I was surprised when we went there about 15 years ago that to see all these pictures of Mao everywhere, because I knew the hardships that people gone through and how many people had died, the Cultural Revolution, all these other things. I was surprised to see him still essentially revered. But we do that, don't we, in various countries?
Yeah, and Marx, you know, the really the evil genius that his idea, a toxic ideology, led to the deaths of more than 100 million people. He was still has been revered by this left and by the professors and the university and the students there as well. So yeah, because this ideology has never been public trialed and denounced, and that is the problem.
And that's why your book is very important. Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in a, as a child in the Cultural Revolution. Did you get sent out into the rural areas and everything as they were doing?
Yeah, it's a long history, and it's complicated, and it's I do my best to just make it short and still, you know, make sense. Okay, so I was in my second semester of the first grade when Cultural Revolution started in 1966. So I had one semester of more or less normal education. And then the and I remember very little, but I do remember, you know, in the reading class, we were learning sentences that just describing nature, kind of peaceful, kind of a memorable and a normal kind of thing. And then and that was it. That's the only thing I remember. And then heading on to the second semester, that's when the Cultural Revolution started. And pretty much immediately, the school was closed because all the principals and teachers were ousted by the students because they were, they become the target of the Cultural Revolution because Mao condemned all of them as counter-revolution, reactionary intellectual authority, meaning they were this the enemy of the state, should be ousted. So the students turned against the teachers, and the school were closed. Closed for me 2 years. And for others, other places, as far as long as 4 years, no school, total chaos. And so we, as little kids, had nothing to do. So we went to the streets every day. And then what we witnessed is the unfolding of the Cultural Revolution, of the struggle sessions, parade of those people being denounced, and the Red Guards debate each other, and pretty soon, and cancel culture, definitely, smashing of statues, and taking down any signboards of school of stores that were traditional. Anything that is not communist or revolutionary were all smashed and destroyed, and pretty soon turned into violence.
You know, I did an interview not too long ago with an individual who wrote a book about a Project Veritas whistleblower's experience in a corporation and how they were pushing, you know, this critical race theory and things like that. And he was very upset about it. He was black, and he was still upset about it. He didn't like it. And so he started taking notes, and then he became a whistleblower for Project Veritas. Then he wrote the book. And when I talked to the guy who wrote the book with him and really for him, he was saying, yeah, you know, all this stuff that's happening, critical race theory and all the rest of this stuff, people want to call it Marxism. It's not Marxism. It's like, oh, it is Marxism. It absolutely is. And so many different ways. I couldn't believe it when he said that. I didn't really, you know, get into it with him because I really wanted to find out this guy's experiences. But, you know, it really is purely Marxism. Talk about the struggle sessions. And people can understand, if they understand some of the specifics of these things, you know, what does a struggle session look like? They'll start to see how it aligns with what we're seeing here in the United States.
Yes, yes. But I want to add to what you just said. Too many people, I'm not talking about people on the left, I'm talking about conservatives. Still, we don't have enough people understand the nature of wokeism. It is pure cultural Marxism, and it's pure Maoism. And that's why I call my my book, Mao's America. It is Maoism with American characteristics.
And so, that's why I don't like to use the term woke. I mean, first of all, these people are not awake. They're not conscious of what's going on. No, and the people who use that term, that's another trick that they do. And they come up with their own labels for themselves and their labels for you. And we must not use those labels because that's propaganda too.
The CCP used the same word, woke.
Did they really?
Yeah. They did. Wow. And in Chinese, it's called jiewu, meaning awakening inside you, a consciousness. And we have to raise our class consciousness and see everything in terms of class. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, anyone that somehow runs against the party narrative is casted as the enemy of the state or the black class. Mm-hmm. And you always want to do anything to remain in the red class, which is the allies of revolution. And constantly everyone has to raise their class wokeness or consciousness. No, same terminology. Yeah. But people, of course, they don't know because they never learned the history.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's interesting in this country, too, that they got everybody to agree with, okay, we got the red states and the blue states. And it's like, no, the blue states are pushing Marxism, socialism. Mm-hmm. The red states, you know, red has always been the color of the communists, as you just pointed out.
Yeah, you're revolution.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they do that to muddy the water, to confuse people.
Absolutely.
And you got people out there saying, yes, we're the red states. We're the... It's like,
I know. See, I am so disgusted with communism.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I don't want to wear anything red because that just reminds me of communism, of revolution, of blood, of violence. Mm-hmm. And then come here, okay, you know, we are, you know, Republican is red. But then I found out the Democrats did the switch because they don't want to associate with communism, which is exactly what they are.
Yes.
Anyway, so now I embrace red because now I'm conservative because stuck with the color red. We just have to make the best of it.
I just try to avoid that term and that term red and woke as much as I can, because you know, if you go back and you look at Antifa, I got a friend who was in Germany and he says, you go back to the 1930s, they haven't even changed their flag. They had the same flag in Germany in the 1930s that they've got now. And so, yeah, it is amazing how they just import this stuff over them because Americans don't know their history and they don't know what has happened in other countries. They swallow it hook, line, and sinker. So tell us about the struggle sessions.
Yeah, struggle session. What is struggle session? And actually, I'm going a little deeper what that really means. A struggle session is a term and used not just during the Cultural Revolution. It started as soon as the communists took over China in 1949. And then one of the major campaigns they launched is called land reform. Land reform is what communists did to fulfill their promise to the peasants who support their revolution, mm-hmm. that they're going to give the free land to mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, that's okay. It's always, okay, I got sorry. Some great free gift for you here.
Okay, good. Yeah, okay. So the here, listen to it. How do you get all the peasants together and fight the landlord in order to get their land, mm-hmm. to raise their class consciousness? Because the peasant did not know such a thing as a class. That was an alien to them. Mm-hmm. So they have to be taught, and just like a DEI training. So the communists trained the peasants and told them, you are poor, not because you did not work hard, not because you are not smart.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that now in terms of reparations. Because do you agree that, you know, there they used, and in Europe they used class. And that doesn't work here in America because, you know, nobody really saw themselves as being a different class, but they did see themselves as being a different race, a different skin color.
Yeah.
So that's what they focused on. And that's why there's been so much focus on white privilege and all the rest of this stuff, and why, you know, the reparations is really very much like the promises of land reform. They even go back and say, well, you know, after slavery, you're supposed to get, you know, an acre and 40 mules or something like that, or, you know, that they actually make same these idea. Kinds of analogies. Yeah.
Yeah, same idea. But anyway, mm-hmm. to raise your class, to be woke, is the condition to have a revolution. And then the peasants finally said, okay, we are poor. They were taught, they are poor because the rich exploited and oppressed them. Mm-hmm. So now everyone knows there are two classes. There's a black class, there's a red class, and they are enemies. And then the goal of the red class is to eradicate the black class. So that is the beginning of the political identity. And that was the thing that the CCP used to permanently divide American the Chinese people. Mm-hmm. Okay, going back to so the struggle session started in the land reform in 1949 to 1951. The same formula, they absolutely did the same tactic, is the landlord or the rich peasants will be struggled against, like mm-hmm. a public trial, and the peasants would condemn them, and the peasants were coached to retell their suffering and then blame all their suffering, all their problem, to the landlord. And then they will say, what do we do with the landlord? And our death to the landlord, and then dragged out and executed. And that's how it started. And during the Cultural Revolution, the enemy has shifted. It's no longer the landlord and the rich peasants. They become those in power, meaning those were the CCP bureaucrats or the CCP leadership. Why? Because Mao felt like he was no longer in control of his party. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to purge everyone. He can't purge everyone because that would look like he was after his own party. He had a better idea. He mobilized all the young people from his government schools and his universities. Those were called the Red Guards. Mm-hmm. So they took mobilized the Red Guards, gave them power, pure power, and dismantled the police and the law enforcement, and no one can stop them. Anything they do was justified. Anything they do has no consequences. So they went after those in power, all levels of the government, from the village to the central government. So that is what the Red Guards did. Struggle session is, I witnessed the struggle session for the governor of my province. So because the governor was pretty tall, so they got two basketball players to hold him on the stage, and so to make the governor look small. And then the Red Guards have a loudspeaker and denounce him. And so then people shout slogans. And during that particular struggle session, I did not see violence, but he was beaten. He was struggled against. He probably went to like 100 of this kind of a struggle session. And his wife was also part of that struggle sessions. And during one struggle session, they pulled, the Red Guards pulled all her hair off.
Wow.
And eventually she committed suicide.
Wow.
So that is, there is violent struggle session that people were beaten to death right on the spot. And there were milder, which is just verbal abuse. That's what I looked at. But that's not it. It's not just, struggle session is not something against denounced enemy. Struggle session really, really means struggle against yourself. And in CCP's word is criticism and self-criticism. Mm. As a young kid, I went through, it's routine. It's every week there is a political study. And then we have to read some of the Mao's quotation. And then we carry out this self-criticism and self-criticism. So each kid will say whatever the the kid did not do well enough according to Mao's instruction. So you denounce yourself.
Wow. And we see that today. We see that today. The kids have to denounce themselves because of their, their gender, their normalcy or whatever that we would say, or their skin color. Yeah. That it's exactly the same thing that they did.
See, amazing. You see, so you denounce yourself and then you denounce your classmates. So we go around and round and round. You say, okay, I did not do this right, of course, we did not say we have privilege. We, just say we were not up to Mao's instruction and we should do better. And then say, so-and-so, that day I saw you say this and I saw you act like that, and that's not right. So that is really the core. It's not those kind of a public trial. It is at every level. Every person is involved in struggle session. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what we're seeing now, DEI. You denounce your privilege if you're white, okay? And then, you swear that you'll do better, right? And then you denounce your coworker who you heard saying this and that. And that's absolutely the same thing.
Oh, yes. I remember the testimony of a young girl who was pressured into gender mutilation of surgery and things like that. And she said, I got into this group because, and I forget what it was. It was some pop group that she liked or some game that she liked or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a special interest group. But everybody that was in it was into this type of struggle session thing. She didn't call it that, but she said, they were all leftist and I was just heterosexual and I was white and I had to denounce myself to be a part of this group. And so I started denouncing all the, it wasn't enough to just say, okay, you do whatever you want. I had to hate myself for that.
Yes,
and I had to make these confessions to them. That is what they're doing to all the kids. It's amazing how they have very insidiously and subtly and undercover inserted all of these psychological tactics that were used by Mao in America. It's amazing.
And of course, because people have no idea because they don't know history.
That's right.
And people like me see through right away because it's the same. Absolutely the same thing. So you can't be just not a racist, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be anti-racist.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so exactly the same idea.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about the cancel culture, of course, which is tied with that as well, and the need for them to destroy statues. We just saw this fetishized destruction of a Robert E. Lee statue, and took up a very high quality video of them melting it down, all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
This is a very important thing for the communists to take down statues and to erase the culture that's existing there.
Yeah. The goal is to erase past, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cancel culture is really to, in China, it's called a destruction of the four olds. Old idea, old culture, old habit, old custom. Anything that is traditional, anything that is pre communist regime has to be erased, has to be destroyed. And you start with something very symbolic, right? Anything that is everyone can see. And then what you do, you go and destroy the statues. Mm-hmm. And so in China, we did not have many public statues as in the West. Mm-hmm. Most of them were religious statues, such as in the Buddhist temple or mm-hmm. in church. Mm-hmm. And that's what they went after. They destroyed all the statues, and that's not it. They changed the names of everything that is not traditional, that is traditional, such as institution names, store names, food brand. Sounds wow. familiar?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Street
yeah.
names.
Oh, man. Yeah. We're deep into that. This. We're deep into this, aren't we? So the four O's, old ideas, old culture, old habit. What was the fourth one?
And old custom.
Old customs. Interesting. Now,
so it's just the civilization of yes. Of China.
Yes.
Yeah. It all has to go. Why? Because if you want to install Maoism as the supreme ideology or the religion of the land, you have to remove everything before it.
Yes.
And that and the cancel culture went to a next stage. Okay, they destroy everything in the public. Okay. And they say there are more. They were hidden in people's homes. And we have to go after that. Mm. That's what they did. Mm. They raided people's homes and took whatever they think is old, destroyed them or confiscated them. This is the largest looting operation in the history of mankind.
Wow. Wow. Of course, we have the IRS is going to be made 5 to 7 times bigger depending on which budget they go through. And that's what I'm concerned about, is that they're going to go around confiscating not necessarily statues, because people don't have that many statues or things like that on their own, but go around confiscating any physical property. Tell us a little bit about what they did to the family. Because that is a key part of this, you know, in America. Was there, as part of the four olds, would the family fall into one of these in terms of culture or custom or something like that?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Take your time. Drink something if you'd like to. Go ahead. I'll cover here for you. You said that again. We look at things like critical race theory and stuff like that. Again, we're talking about race rather than class. That's the difference in communism in America versus China or Europe. But again, old ideas, old cultures, old habits, and old customs. And and I imagine family fits in there somewhere.
Absolutely. So for family, you don't have to guess. You just read Communist Manifesto. It laid out there clearly. There's three things they want to abolish. One is private property. Another is religion. Mm-hmm. Another is family. So that is laid out there, clear for everyone to see. They have to destroy religion, because in order to implement communism as the religion, this is very, very important. Communism is not is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and even though they say they're against the religion, but it is a religion. It replaces religion. So they have to destroy religion, and they have to destroy family, because those are the foundations of any society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that started very early on, especially in schools. And so it was very, very clear to everyone, not just to kids, but to parents as well. The kids belong to the state.
Yes.
And parents understand that. Mm. And so if you have to choose between your parents and the state, you choose the state. Mm. And there's no question about it. Many kids reported their parents during the Cultural Revolution to the authority, and some of the parents were arrested and some were executed. It was so clear in my mind, in every kid's mind, the party was our parents, and the Chairman Mao was our parent. And that is, if you talk to any people lived under communism, it is a common threat. They destroy religion, they destroy family.
Yeah, and of course, you know, those of us who knew about that, understood and saw that when Hillary Clinton said it takes a village to raise a child. Yes. You know, you turn your, you destroy the family, you put the children under the care of the government. We had MSNBC running public service announcements a few years ago. Melissa Harris Perry, I think was her name. She got to get over this idea the children belong to the parents. And at that point in time, they hadn't really found something that they could use as a wedge. Now what they're doing is they're using this transgender thing as a wedge.
Yes.
And, yeah, and that's where it's coming in. But it'll be other things. You know, you'll be denounced
because it'll be other things.
Yeah, it'll be other things. That's just the first thing that they're doing right now. Yeah. Yeah, that was not on the horizon. And, you know, people are looking at this. Oh, okay, fine. You know, the village is there. They're going to help to do it. And but, you know, what? Where is the conflict here? And they and so they came up with a conflict. First, they sell you the idea that kids belong to the state and to the society and to the village. And then they find the issues of conflict to punish the parents with.
But actually, they have been doing that before transgender. Transgender really just showcased that how they are trying to cut the ties between parents and children, and actively set children up against their parents. But for decades, they have been teaching the values of communism and Marxism. And even though that's not what American know about. But they have been developing the children with a new set of ideologies and created this conflict between generations, right? And as a lot of family, especially in recent years, a lot of families just broken up, just like the Cultural Revolution, because they don't agree with each other ideologically. And they have been doing that for a very, very long time. And they will find other issues, and they will find any issues to advance their agenda. That means to take the children away from the parents so they control them.
That's right. Yeah, you know, just as we saw that they used class in China and in Europe as a dividing thing, and here they use skin color, then I think also in the same way, this dividing wedge, I've seen this, as you talk about, this has been going on for decades, of course. And I remember one of the first cases that I saw this is up in Massachusetts, and it was a father who didn't want his 8-year-old girl in a sex education class that at the time was not into all of these, shall we say, highly deviant sexual practices that are going on right now. It was just straight sex, but she was 8 years old. And he said, I don't think she's mature enough for this. And he and they said, well, she has to do it. So he went to school to take her out. They arrested him for trespassing. And the judge said, when you drop your child off at the school, you have surrendered them to the state, and we will act in loco parentis in place of the parents. And so there's been this wedge, you know, that they've been making the wedge of the sexual wedge. They've been making it wider and wider with all the different diverse practices and everything. But just as they began to use this wedge of sexuality against the parents, and this really kind of does go back even to the mid 20th century, you know, where you had then following up, you know, in the 1950s, the generation gap, and then the sexual revolution, all this stuff. They've been using the sex thing as a wedge issue, especially with the parents. And they've really weaponized it in a very visual way, especially in just the last few years. But they'll find other things, as you point out. It always is something.
Yeah, sex was their secret weapon. But it's really anything traditional, anything kind of normal they are challenging right now, right? For in the communist country that we were taught, we were equal to the parents. We can educate our parents. So many times we were taught that we were better than our parents because we know better. We are more updated in our learning. And so we should always watch out our parents and make sure they are up to date with their learning. And so, and that's why in the communist countries and they worship or they give power to the youth. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. The young people, they know, we're led to believe that they know better or they know what's best for them. And the same ideology, the same idea that the children are better off knowing what's best for them than the parents.
That's right. And I saw that, you know, even though I was a child at the time, you know, you could see that there was something different that had happened. And it was really flowing out of the schools. They use the schools even at the beginning of all this. The idea that we've got in America, one of the things that's made us very vulnerable is we love the idea of that we're constantly reinventing culture. Our culture is very fluid. I would imagine that in China, it was a lot more conservative and not as fluctuating as it has been in America because of the embracing of media and entertainment and of the baby boom teenagers and all the rest of the stuff. They were able to then have this rapidly evolving culture that really kind of played into their hands, I think. But was it more conservative in China when Mao came in terms of culture and family?
Yeah, it was very traditional.
Yeah.
But during the Cultural Revolution, everything turned upside down. In the Cultural Revolution, to us, the world was turned upside down, just like today. We're taught similar things. I think some of them were not as extreme as what we see in America. But we were also taught that there's no difference between men and women. We're the same. Mm-hmm. We are whatever men can do, women can do better.
The other half of the sky. The other half of the sky.
Yeah, like Biden quoted. Mm-hmm. And so, so we dress like a man. We talk like men. We think like men. We act like men. So if you go to China in the 60s and 70s, you see a sea of gray. People look like, and you can hardly distinguish the gender. And so we were made into a genderless society. And so Mao and always bragged that he liberated women, mm-hmm. and from the oppression of the old society and of the patriarchy, but they did not give them choice. So they all liberated from from the household, chores, and their children were sent to daycare by the government. So they were forced to join their workforce. They become the work bee for the party. They mm-hmm. work side by side with the men. So they become men. So it's not extreme as say that the women can be men and men can be women, but it's close.
Same idea. Yeah. Yeah, we just add in a kind of a sexual deviance overtone to it. that radical leveling, which is another, you know, everything in communism is leveled, right? Take everybody down except for the people at top. Everybody else owns nothing and they're happier and all that, aren't they?
Yeah. No, that's what I say. Now we're taught that we should own nothing and be happy.
Yeah.
In Chinese, in the communist China, in most time, especially that we had nothing and we have to be happy. If you show that you're not happy, if you show that you're dissatisfied, you will end up in a struggle session or in the gulags.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they're working on here. That's what exactly mm-hmm. what. Yeah, if you are not happy, you better take the Brave New World approach. You know, you can self-medicate with drugs or alcohol or sex or whatever to just drop out of the world. Mm-hmm. But if you pay attention and you get upset about it, you get the 1984 treatment. And it's amazing how this is all coming around and we're seeing exactly the same type of thing. So you've written the book, you've gone around and talked to a lot of people and trying to wake up Americans. Are they starting to see the light in this?
I do. I think when I started to talk, and I remember one particular place and I went to talk and I talk about Cultural Revolution, Red Guards, and I just noticed there's this kind of blank look from the audience. And I realized, my God, They really don't know anything. I have to start from the very beginning. And I can't just say the Cultural Revolution. What is Cultural Revolution? Why Cultural Revolution? What is Red Guard? How it come into being? And there's just too much to explain in a, you know, like 40 minutes speak. And in the process, a lot of people ask me, you know, I met a lot of people in the past 2 years. And they said, do you have a book? I'm going to write a book. And it's because that I know that I need to write this book to explain everything in more detail, how and why and where and all that. Mm-hmm. And I hope this is going to be helpful for people to understand what the Chinese Cultural Revolution is about and why it's so similar to the American Cultural Revolution that is unfolding in front of us.
Yeah, you know, people talk about communist subversion, but the reason they mention that is because these people have brought the exact same tactics and plans and you know, pretended that this is just something that they thought of. And if we don't understand the pattern and how this has been used and what it led to, it's going to be really bad. Now, were you there during the period when there was a lot of starvation and things like that?
No. I was born in that time. And it started in 1959, lasted 3 years. So
you're not, you're a child, you're not really caught up in the Great Leap Forward type of thing, right?
I was too little for that. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, like my parents' generation know about, and the stories are still alive that I know enough growing up. But I did not understand why, but I just understood that it was a time that everyone was going hungry, and those were lucky ones because they were in the city and they have ration. They have ration of a certain amount of food, even though everybody was going hungry. But in the countryside, that's where deaths took place. Wow. Up to 50 million Chinese peasants died.
Wow. It's very interesting how both Stalin and Mao used so many of the same tactics, as you're pointing out, with the struggle sessions and everything. You know, Stalin had his purges, but then at the beginning of all this, you know, Stalin had his Holodomor in Ukraine, goes to the place where it's the most fertile, and starves the people to death. Mao does the same thing with his Great Leap Forward. And it's very troubling to see that now that we have our technocrat overlords who are saying, well, we're going to have to change the way you do food, and we're going to, you know, dismantle the food supply. We're going to dismantle energy. We're going to do all this stuff. All of that stuff seems to be, that same tactic seems to be on the horizon. And of course, that really is kind of at the leading edge of the oppression, because first you have to take everything away from everybody and do your great reset before you can impose this new system. And I think they've got a timeline for this new system of 2030. Yeah. So I think they're going to escalate this pretty quickly. What do you think?
Yes, I think that people absolutely need to understand this. Communism has nothing to do with communalism, right? Communal, we're just sharing, we're happy together, we take away private property, so there's no exploitation, we're all happy together. Communism is all about one thing, control.
Yes.
Okay, control everything in people's lives. Control what you can have, control where you can live. And now we're told 15 minutes a city is where we should live. Control what where you can move during the mouse time. They control in such a way that nobody can really move just to visit another place, because they give you coupon for food, and the coupon only apply to where you live. So if you say, I'm going to take 3 months vacation, travel around the country, you can't do that. First of all, you had no money. And second, your coupon could not apply to another city. So you're kind of stuck where you were. And then how many children you can have, right? When before, they want to have as many as children as possible. They follow Stalin's policy, as many. And then they change it. Only have one. If you have more, you're dragged to the hospital and forcefully, your baby will forcefully aborted. And then what you can say, there's no freedom of speech. Zero. Okay. And if you have to praise the party, you have to praise it correctly. If you praise the party incorrectly, you're also in trouble. And mostly, people pay attention what you can think. So that is communism.
Yes.
In a nutshell.
That's
control.
That's true.
And so people think, do you know that that what you taught was a lie when you were, you know, in school? How do I know? I have no idea, because all the information was controlled. I have no idea to compare to anything, right? It's just one version of everything, one version of truth, and it's from the party, and the one source of information is from the party media or from the school. Everything is controlled by, and so when you have no other information, you can't think. You cannot think critically without access to information.
That's right. And that's why they're so working so hard on censorship now.
Yes,
it is a very insidious program. And of course, it's interesting when we talk about the one-child policy, because what China has done is that they've aligned themselves with this globalist climate movement. And the globalist climate movement is a perfect fit, a perfect rationale for them to institute communism. One of the clips that I've played several times is Justin Trudeau. He was asked, what's your favorite country in the world besides, of course, Canada? And he says, China, because I could tell everybody what to do to save the environment. That's exactly what this is all about. They have a rationale to tell everybody what to do, and they're going to control everything in our lives on the basis of that, including how many kids we have. And of course, the whole climate and environmental movement was born out of depopulation. And exactly. The idea that humans are a virus and we've got to reduce humanity, which is exactly what Stalin and Mao wanted to do with their starvation programs. You know, there's too many people here to control. So let's reduce the number of people here. And as I reduce them and devastate the population in my country, I can show my authority and establish myself as the dread authority in this particular country. It's amazing how they have followed through to the letter all of these same policies, and it's a plan that's just rolling out to us.
And also, you know what's happening in China now, right? They ran out of cheap labor. Mm-hmm. They are in deep, deep trouble, and the population is so aged, and the future is dire.
Yes.
It is and then you know what the party said, you should have three. And that is worse than depopulation. In the very beginning, Stalin encouraged first after Second World War, right? They have like a award to mother who have 9 children, 10 children, and Mao did the same thing. So they control everything according to their needs.
That's
so
right.
Now they ask people to have three. Well, that's not that easy. You just ask and people just have three. But this started with party members. Party members, if you want promotion, you are required to have 3 children.
Wow.
Well, that's communism. Control.
Yeah.
Control of everything.
Just flip the switch and now we're going to do something completely different. And so did you have any experience when you were there in terms of Christian persecution, the underground church that is there? I know that's...
I had no idea what Christianity was.
Mm.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
And so no idea, because religion removed out of our lives. The only thing that, in China, the largest religion is Buddhism, has been Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are temples. And even though some of them were destroyed, but there are still some in the city. And but they turned into parks. So growing up, I go into this so-called Buddhist parks. So I know there's such a thing. And then we're told they're all superstitious. Mm-hmm. And it's all backward and primitive. So I just go there and look at the Buddha and just thinking that's just so stupid. They make a statue like that. So religion was absent in our lives. And of course, I know better. We had a religion, that's communism.
Yeah.
And we had a God, that's Mao.
Yeah.
And we had our Bible, that's the Mao's red little book, right? But only in the early 80s, and so I was working in the in a college for training school teachers, And then Americans started coming in, and they want to see churches. Mm-hmm. And so by then, some of them started to open. And I was shocked to find there is a building that I passed through there countless times was a church. And so I took them there, the American teachers, and there I met a young guy. And so he said, he was, I was 20, in my early 20s, and he was too. So he said he was Christian, and because his parents had passed it down to them, they just do it at home. Mm-hmm. I was like, really? I have no clue. I really had no clue that there was such a thing that in China, there's among us, there are some underground Christians. Mm-hmm. So, of course, later, it opened up a little more, and in the 90s and early 2000s. But now, it's crashing. Then they're closing churches, mm-hmm. and the churches that are not closed become the party churches.
Yes.
And if mm-hmm. you go to some of the churches in the altar, it's a mouse portrait and Xi Jinping's portrait.
Yes.
And
yes.
Next to the cross.
I've talked about that many times, that if you're going to put up a cross, you got to put Mao on one side and Xi Jinping on the other side. And I said, do they realize that they've got Jesus and the two thieves on either side?
Yeah. I know, but so if you, today, if you go to China, you can still go to church. There's still some open. Mm-hmm. Those are CCP's church.
Yes.
And the real church is underground. That's and right. then later, after I came out, I met more people who were part of that underground church. So,
their church, they call it the Church of the Three-Person Self or something like that, don't they? Yes. Isn't it something like that?
No, this, the Three Self was a policy that installed early on. And then, basically, they are going to make church Chinese church, and not even Chinese church. A CCP's church.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
so if you go to today, if you go to, I went actually. I checked the Association for Buddhism in China, Christianity, Catholic, whatever. If you go to their website, the landing page is they support the Communist Party, they support socialism, they support. Forget it.
Yeah.
They are not really independent.
And you find that, what they started doing, even the churches that were doing that, trying to bow and scrape to the Communist Party, they would then come in and tear them down anyway. It's just, it depends on what their whim is. I remember when we were there, for a couple of weeks. And then as we went south into Hong Kong and were on the train, I saw crosses for the first time. It's like, I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't seen any churches or any crosses or anything like that the whole time we were there. In China, it's all underground, but it's pretty big underground from all reports, because that kind of persecution really grows a church, and it grows real strong church members who they're not going to be coming for the ice cream social. That's just put it that way. Yeah, they're there for because they're really serious about it. Well, I tell you,
that's another thing people should know. Under communism, there's absolutely no freedom for religion or faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think they're right to understand that the church is their enemy, because I think that is the most effective guerrilla organization to oppose mm-hmm. this kind of authoritarianism. Christianity mm-hmm. was the roots of our liberal society in the West, and mm-hmm. and it's going to be the way that they're going to uproot the communists from the ground up, I think, in that country. But, when you're talking about the fact that even they wanted to control what you think, that was when Rod Dreher was talking to people who had come from Russia and places like that, and in the tradition of Solzhenitsyn, he actually named his book Live Not by Lies, because that was an essay by Solzhenitsyn. That's what they want you to do. They want you to, as you point out, they as a child, you're given one source of information. And that's just the way that it is. And so you just go with that. But for the other people, and if you come up with, eventually they're going to come to you and tell you that they want you to repeat 2 + 2 = 5. And if you don't
until you believe it.
Yes.
Until you believe it.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's the thing. It's about breaking your will to eventually come in. And I think that's another aspect of what we see with this gender stuff. You know, you have to, regardless of what you actually see or know or whatever, you've got to deny that and go with what they say is real. And so that's the key thing, you know, and that was the one thing that Solzhenitsyn saw that was, it's the common thing amongst all these different totalitarian societies is that ultimately you're going to have to bend your, what you know is true is going to have to be bent to what they want you to say just as a power exercise. And we see that happening now in the United States. And that's why it's so important for people to say, nope, I'm not going to go there. And understand where this, all of this is coming from. All of these things, as you point out, Mao's America, warning America of the fact that this is a plan. It is an agenda. They've executed this plan. And it's going to be so much worse for us because now they have the leverage of technology that Mao didn't have.
And also, just this morning, I watched a clip of the interview by this guy, George, he used to be the Clinton's advisor, a Greek name, I can't remember right now, George, whatever, Kallapolis.
Stephanopoulos? Okay. Stephanopoulos?
Yes, and an interview, a Congress member, and he just keep doing that. Can you say that 2020 election is not stolen? And then when he was talking about something, he bring it back. Can you say yes or no? It is stolen. That's exactly the same tactic.
Struggle
woman
session.
Is a woman is. Can you say this man is standing in front of you that he is a woman? You have to say it. Can you say it? Say it now. Yes. Same tactic.
It's a struggle session, isn't it? Well, it
struggle
is.
Session.
Yeah, it is time for us to struggle against these people. And you have to, people need to understand. That's why your book is so important. People need to understand the tactics. This is nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. Solomon was wise enough to say that. And of course, this kind of stuff has been going around forever, but it has been honed into a fine tactic of psychological manipulation by the communists. And now what they're going to do worldwide is take that tactic, that agenda that you lay out here that Mao did, and they're going to wed it to modern technology to give them more leverage on people, I think.
Just realize that they have established the truth, right? The climate is changing, and they're going to destroy the earth if we don't do anything. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we are denier.
That's right.
And that is exactly what Mao did. One truth, and everyone has to go by it. Mm-hmm. And if you question it, you're an enemy of the state.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we see that over and over again. It is so important for people to see this. Again, the book is Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning. Best place to get that, anywhere the books are sold, or do you have a website that you'd like to, that you sell it at directly?
I know, I should have. But yeah. I don't.
It'll get you a little bit more money. So I always want to offer that to authors because I know that they make a little bit more money if they sell it direct. But again, Amazon, anywhere that books are sold,
yes.
Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning, very important. Thank you so much for speaking out about this and telling people this and speaking out in these, you know, the beginning of the struggle sessions that are there. Thank you so much for a message that is so needed and a historical context and perspective that is so missing in America that people can find in your book. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shi Van Fleet. Thank you very much. We'll take a quick break, folks, and we will be right back. Stay with us. Thank you.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.